Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Bears.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Did you hear that scream this week, Mark?
You know what? In the first show, the first Pearl Jam show I saw on Thursday, they did not play Dirty Frank. It's rare, honestly, when they play Dirty Frank. We'll see. Maybe they will play it tonight when Pearl Jam does their second and final show at Wrigley Field.
I understand you got a guy. You got Cloud. You got Parking Cloud in Wrigleyville. I understand you got a guy.
I do have a guy. What a lifesaver Sean Sears is, because the parking in Wrigleyville, boy, boy, oh boy, do they jack it up. Then low-key Sean Sears is like, hey, you know, if you want to go to the, if you need parking, man, I got parking passes. I'm like, yeah?
Yeah.
So Sean, I thank you, Sean. You are a lifesaver 2 days in a row.
Hey, no problem, man. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
So. Let me ask you this, since you're a guy who can get stuff. You got any weed?
My no guy.
Yeah, if only it were legal in Illinois.
Can you put that in the lockbox too?
Yeah.
I'll see what I could sneak in there for you. Maybe there might be some prizes.
No, that's the beautiful part about me is I have learned to enjoy even live music sober. Never thought it would be possible, but there it is.
And if it's the weed you're looking for, look, you get a contact high just by being there.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And the Pearl Jam fans have probably, in terms of music fandom currently, the disposable income is strong. So they get the good stuff, is what I'm trying to say.
So now you're worried about which way the wind's going to blow. Is it blowing into my face where my seats are? Or do I have to position myself differently?
You got
to
check those flags, man. Which direction's it going?
Hey, I got people in Wrigleyville like Sean and some other folks. I'll have to see where. Yeah, that's a great point. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, they haven't banned the shift when it comes to contact highs. So make sure you get that out.
It can absolutely affect everybody.
He's Mark Grody. He joins me on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois, and we're talking Bears. And so we played earlier your lesson for Caleb, how he should, he should do that. Bears. And boy, he certainly sounded like a willing student. What did you think of how that lesson went?
Yeah, I'm just glad that I got it out there to him. I don't think he really got it at the moment. You know, he was receptive, but I think it's coming to him for the first time. I just wanted to get it out there, get it in his brain, start to get him thinking about that. It, look, if it takes him the whole year, if it's just, and if he just does Da Bears, if he wants to just stick with that, that's great. But I just thought, like, if he really wants to be in the club, that Bears would go a long way. But as a texter pointed out after we did the interview, the texter was like, hey, that's his thing, the Bears, and Bears, Grody, is your thing. So why force your thing on him? But I just think it would be good for Bears Nation and Score Nation and all Bears fans if he started saying Bears.
And it goes back, the staying power of the Bears, considering Bears. That was a 1980s sketch on Saturday Night Live. Caleb Williams wasn't born.
Right.
When that aired, or even when Ditka finally did the sketch along with Chris Farley and Joe Mantegna and George Wendt and
so good.
And Carl Walarski.
Yeah. And don't forget the occasional appearance of a Diane Ditka making knackwurst.
So the staying power of that. So I can see where that's sunk into his consciousness.
Yeah, well, I think it was at the Combine that I believe it was Ryan Poles or somebody in that room when they met with him did show him that video, and him and Rome and all those guys. So it's like setting the base. Like, here's some things you should probably know about Chicago and the Bears, their reputation, the monsters of the Midway. You should probably know about that, and Butkus and Hallis and all of the Bears' history. And you know what? Just to really show you the pop culture side of the Bears, here it is. And if you notice, like, even in the Hard Knocks intro, they have, you know, there's a Carl Walarski moment. Like, so I think it was just it's an education process, so I'm proud of the Bears for educating him, and I am just further. I'm like secondary education when it comes to that stuff, you know, because they could show Poles and Eberflus, not from Chicago. They can show They can show the top 40 stuff. I gotcha. I got the deep cuts. Like, if you really want to know what's been going on here in Chicago, Caleb, I got you.
There you go. Getting it from the best. So
that's right.
So the. And by the way, Carl Walarski was the name of the character of Robert Smigel, who created that whole thing. He used to be in Chicago, and he loved the whole aviator glasses. He would go on to write, because he worked with Conan, and he loved the aviator glasses. He wrote the sketch that way, and he would write Triumph the Insult Dog. And Robert Smigel is just a genius. One time I used him when I was at the Sun-Times writing a column. It was Bulls Knicks. And I said, could you – I know you're a Bears guy, but – the Bulls, can you do a scouting report for me? So I did a scouting report with him, him. And I said, okay, so we're doing starting lineups, and it's, okay, the Knicks power forward, Charles Oakley. And in that accent, he goes, and I can't do it, he goes, look for Oakley to bite. This is just great. He's wonderful. So
I think my favorite, real quick, I know we're trying to get Bears serious.
No, we're not. Okay. It's a holiday. Right. We can take a holiday from Bears serious, though.
I think low-key my favorite – you're right, it is a holiday. Low-key my favorite when they were doing the Bulls version of the Bears was when they asked Michael Jordan, hey, Michael, I got a question for you. Have you ever considered just playing these teams by yourself? That's good. Like the genuine curiosity. You know, I got an idea. You know, here's something nobody's talking about. Have you ever considered? Like, it was the Olympics. It was the original Dream Team. Have you ever considered playing these teams by yourself?
I don't remember that. I think that's great. The only I remember two things, because Robert Smigel was there when Jordan was co-hosting, and he was telling us, because we had me, Mike Mulligan, and Tim Weigel had dinner with Kim and Adam Sandler, and we're trading Michael Jordan stories. That was our nexus. That's what we had in common. And he said they used one of the sound stages, and they made a basketball court for Michael. That's what you had to do. That's what he wanted. They made a basketball court, and all of the staff, people on the show, were out there playing. And Jordan is sitting in the stands ripping them. Scouting them. Oh man, I tear this guy apart. Oh my god. Oh my god. This guy's got no moves. He's got no handle. What is he doing? And Robert Smigel says, "Yeah, you're Michael Jordan. Of course. Yeah. These are comedy writers.
What are you expecting?"
Yeah. And the other part of that show when he did it was Al Franken as you know
You're good enough. You're smart enough. Stuart Smalley, I believe, is what you're looking for.
Yes, and gosh darn it, people like me. And it was all Jordan could do to keep from busting out in the scene. Michael Jordan needing that kind of daily advice.
Well, what Stuart Smalley actually said to him, he goes, Michael, do you ever get worried on a night that you're not going to be able to dribble the ball or shoot the ball? And he just looks at him and goes, nope.
Well, repeat after me.
But yeah, when they held the mirror up to his face, you could see his lips desperately trying to stay together, and quivering with laughter.
And that was amazing. The only time I really remember SNL doing that kind of near breaking was when Chris Farley character lives in a van. Let me tell you a little about myself. By the time we were gone, David Spade would be laughing into his shirt. And the Debbie Downer sketches.
Yeah. Were they breaking up in those? I don't know, that doesn't stick out. Okay.
Go back and watch them. And Rachel Dratch, who was the reason they were breaking up, was breaking up herself. She would try to act like she was crying and put her hand over her face and her mouth, and she was breaking up too.
It really was a great skit. It really was.
So I had earlier, I was talking about if not now, when, if not him, who? What are you waiting for, Bears fans? That Caleb Williams is like when you fall in love and you make a decision and you go, is she worth getting my heart broken?
Do we want to commit?
Right. And you've been so scarred, both as a lover and as a Bears quarterback admirer, and you've been cutlerized and Craig Krenzeled, and you've been Chad Hutchisoned, and you've been Mitched, and you've been son of Mitch, you've been Fields.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month. Brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
But like everything around it, with the situation he's walking in and this guy's personality, his poise, he's not ducking anything. He's not going to be running around house hall turning off televisions. He's leaning into it. Yeah, okay, we're here. That's what we're going to do. He's writing, signing autographs with times eight because there's one more Super Bowl than Tom Brady won. He's not lacking for confidence, is he? So if not now, when, right? He's worth getting your heart broken.
It's been a really good offseason for a good training camp, I should say, for Caleb Williams. He's looked really good. He's also made mistakes. You know, like I said, like that still in training camp, there were more bad days than good days, I would say, overall. We're like really grading harshly. And sometimes coaches will look at a day that we may grade as bad as good because there were things that they got done that we don't even know about. But the defense outplayed the offense for the most part during training camp. But again, saw all the special plays still in those training camp practices. You guys all got to see the good and the bad sometimes in training camp. So for me, it all adds up to take what you saw seriously, as in there's going to be some bumps, man. There's going to be some three and outs. There could be back-to-back three and outs to start his season. There could be a bad interception somewhere along the way. It's not completely inconceivable, but it's like the game where he made the throw to Roma Dunze. I think that was the where he started with the first three and outs, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like gets out of the pocket and flings it downfield to Roma Dunze and an incredible catch after the Tyler Scott interference bomb. And it's like, oh, okay. So I do think it's not going to be magic. And there was that part of me that was like, okay, this guy's just going to come out and absolutely dominate. I don't think he's going to come out and absolutely dominate, but I do think that he will get there. He will get there eventually. As for the past, I think that's fair. I mean, Mitch Trubisky, I was high on at the time. I was high on Justin Fields when he first came here. And unfortunately, and it's striking to think about, like when you're going through the list as you started to, of Bears' bad quarterbacks of the past. Isn't it crazy that Justin Fields has been added to the list that we go through. Mitch Trubisky said, oh, man, we got to hang these two up. You know what I mean? These two go on the wall now.
We're going to take them to the taxidermist.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like when we go through the list, they hit me there. I'm like, oh, man, when we play this little quarterbacks game, we got two more. We got two more that are in. I think the requirement is that you have to be away from the Bears for an off season, and now we can put Justin Fields up there and Mitch Trubisky. Not as bad as some of the predecessors, even in both of their cases. Like these guys were not jokes of quarterbacks, but they do go on the wall of quarterbacks that failed in Chicago, sadly. And maybe he'll succeed. And maybe he'll succeed in Pittsburgh. But the key is failed in Chicago.
And the best, not best thing, but the thing that stays on brand with Justin Fields, it was always his decision-making. And he decided he wanted to go to Pittsburgh. And Ryan Poles did everything he could, taking less, to get him to Pittsburgh. And he couldn't beat out, you know, rickety, broken down, unimaginative Russell Wilson. So
did they name Russ the starter?
Yeah, it did.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So Justin Fields, he's okay. There you go. You're in Pittsburgh.
That tells you everything. I mean, it's funny throughout that whole competition between the two. I was thinking that Justin Fields had a real shot at it, but it felt exciting to them. But I'm thinking, either way, it feels like you've got this bed of riches with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. But either way, it's probably not going to be good for Pittsburgh. And I mean, I believe in Mike Tomlin. Obviously, this guy is one of the greatest coaches of all time, and he proved a lot of people wrong even last year. So you can't underestimate Mike Tomlin. But they've got two, I think, average quarterbacks at this point, unfortunately.
Can you share with the class this is a scary thing that gets overlooked in all of the Caleb mania. It's not that we've overlooked the idea the offensive line is the worst part of this. The biggest question mark on this team, besides now the long snapper, but the biggest question mark all along has been whether the former offensive lineman as a GM could make this offensive line what it should be, and he hasn't. And now you're getting to the point, you got to a practice where the coach needed to use defensive linemen as offensive linemen because What? Share with the class. Explain, Lucy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Steve, I haven't been out there because I've been doing a lot of hosting duties, but yeah, they're starting to have some issues as far as the depth is concerned, and that's the way they roll. But I will say this, I don't think it's the worst part of the team. I think you're right to say, like, it's a questionable part, but it's not inconceivable that the offensive line could be good. Like, we just don't know yet. Like, is Coleman Shelton, when the lights go on, is he going to be a good center? Is Nate Davis going to stay healthy? Because if he stays healthy, then that's probably a pretty good product. Darnell Wright is heading into his second year, and a lot of people think that he's going to blossom into a cornerstone right tackle for a lot of years. Braxton Jones, people are saying, I can't tell at this point with Braxton Jones if he's better, but a lot of people saying that it seems like he's better. We know Tevin Jenkins, if he stays healthy, is a guy that could be a Pro Bowler. So I think I think most teams look at their offensive line. Like, if you're listening to other reporters, they're probably saying similar things. Like, well, what about the offensive line? Well, this, and if this, and there's only probably 5 to 10 teams in the NFL where you look at and say, yep, that's a really good offensive line. No issues. So even if the Bears are an average offensive line, that's most of the NFL. I hope they're good and I hope they're great, but it's hard to put together a good offensive line.
So the Bears play a schedule that essentially is first half, second half kind of schedule, because they don't play any division games till the second half, to week 11, which is terrific. You have, as a texter noted, thank the Lord the Bears will not open the season with a divisional loss, as we're used to. And that's spot on. But the first 10 games are all about playing everybody. It's like a whole bunch of non-conference games, even though you're playing National Football Conference teams, but none in the division, and then it's almost all the division. And if you're lucky, you get Sam Darnold twice or Brett Rypien twice. So it seems as though you get the quarterback a chance to play without having that loss to Green Bay, which counts double, kind of that feeling. I don't know if you've looked at the schedule that way, if you look at it, how that might benefit the Bears. But when backing up and taking that view, how do you think that plays out or helps, given what you've seen from this team, this coaching staff, and this quarterback this year?
I think it's a great point, that the fact that they don't open up against Green Bay for once. You know, it just feels like there's been too many devastating opening of the season losses. You know, I could beat Mitch Trubisky's first ever game, where he actually didn't play poorly, was in Green Bay, and you had the Roquan Smith sack, Khalil Mack scooping, didn't he score?
And Khalil Mack had a season in the first half and then didn't show up for the second half. And
exactly right. Yeah, I don't need to go through all the minutiae. Yeah. That's what happened. The Bears choked that game away. And then you had the same situation the next year. They open up against Green Bay, and there's booze all over the stadium in the first quarter.
And not alcohol.
Yeah, all right, so I'm not going to go through all this, just to say, yeah, you're right. It doesn't need to be, because if another Bears promise quarterback starts off, hey, Jay Cutler started his career with a devastating loss to the Packers in primetime, right?
And that would be so on brand with him and that team, that team's secondary would eventually say, same old Jay, just stand there and he'll throw you the ball.
Same old Jay.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm sure Aaron Rodgers found Randall Cobb at some point in time in that game. So, no, man, now that I'm thinking about this question in real time, you're right, because until further notice, I've got the Bears losing to the Green Bay Packers twice this year. That's right, I said it. Losing twice to the Green Bay Packers, because they just have not shown under any regime that they can get big wins over the, I mean, that last game of the season was horrid for the Bears in Green Bay, allowing Green Bay to get into the playoffs right there. So until further notice, count me as, to go back to the original question, I do think it's probably good for the Bears to get a full head of steam, because this is the first year in a while, and I guess you can go back to last year as well, where the NFC North is really good. So, yeah, you may as well get a little bit of a callus going before you play some of the best, not just your division, but objectively, some of the best teams on your schedule. You got to play Green Bay twice. You got to play Detroit twice. And you never really know about Minnesota. Who knows? They might be really good. Sam Darnold could become Jared Goff, right, in his second go around, if he gets a second life with Minnesota and he actually looks good. So I think it's awkward, and the overall, you probably, it seems weird that the teams that you play the most, it's like they're an afterthought, they're late in the season, but I think on the overall, it's good this year. Get a nice head of steam and see if that could help them with, you know, Green Bay this year.
Make your mistakes before they bury you, and I think that's the important thing, and so you can fix them. Mark, I appreciate it. You have fun. Are you heading out to Wrigley now to make sure that you got all that parking thing set for Ed? You still call him Ed, don't you?
Well, I've got to get to the Mike McCready party a little bit early, so that's going on. You could see on Instagram some pretty sweet pics that I put up there with our crew. So, and I got a new crew tonight. I'm refreshing the crew tonight. I had one crew on Thursday. I've got a new crew tonight, and I'm sure it'll be a new set list from Pearl Jam as well.
But the same guy with clout, because you got a guy now. You got a guy.
I got a guy.
You got a clout.
His
got a
name
Wrigley
is Sean
guy.
Sears. Shout out to Sean Sears.
So what are you going to do for him? How do you repay this? How do you pay the kindnesses, the way he came through for you?
Yeah, I don't know, Sean. What do you need, buddy? What can I do for you? You want me to slap a 20 on you when I see you? What's the deal?
No, you don't have to give me any money. No, yeah. I offered this to you. It's not like you came to me for this. So.
No, you did. Yeah, it was like, and it was funny because I think it was in the middle of trying to negotiate with a couple of friends everybody was going to come to Oak Park and they were going to get on the train and go to Chicago. And then I was going to go to my buddies who lives in Logan Square in the middle of all that, low key Sean, hey, I got parking tickets, but I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
Yeah.
No, Sean's the best.
You're, all right. Yeah. All right. Well, you won't.
PCA. I know what I'll do for you. I'll get you a framed autograph photo of PCA. How about that?
I would gladly take that. That's a deal.
Okay,
get this in writing here. Let's make sure that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's done. You got a guy. All right.
Sick.
Grody's got a guy. There we go. Thanks, Mark.
Bye, Steve.
Mark Grody, Pearl Jam enthusiast and parking ticket enthusiast. All right, we'll take a break. We come back. Let's do a Bears thing. Bears, my friends. A win, a loss. Let's do a Bears thing with another team in town. Let's see if we can do this. Let's see if we can adapt it. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. It'll never be more appropriate than our next segment. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Look, we're not going to be in an Ohtani race. I'll tell you that right now. I'll give you.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That was the disgraceful chairman of the White Sox. Laughingly talking about the best player in baseball, doing things not even Babe Ruth did. We don't need him. So he was insulting his fans. Last night, Ohtani had yet another home run and stolen base game. He's on pace for 51 home runs and 51 stolen bases. Why would any team want a unicorn? Why would you want to be in that race? Meanwhile, last night, the disgraceful White Sox chairman's team was losing to the Mets. This is after they got swept by Texas, the 21st time Sox had been swept this year. The Sox are 31-105. That's one loss shy of the franchise record set in 1970. The Sox are on pace to finish with a 37-125 record.
Man, that sucks.
That would break the major league mark for losses set by the 62 Mets, which is 40-120, and a .228 winning percentage, which would break the mark set by the 1916 Philadelphia Athletics, who went 36-117 for a .235 winning percentage. What it comes down to is the Sox can win only 8 more games to break the major league record for the worst, most horrible, biggest joke of a franchise set by the 62 Mets.
Oh, you got to be bleeping me.
Every expansion team since then in the expansion era in 1961 has been better than Chairman Reinsdorf's Clown College at 35th and Shields. Is La Russa responsible for this, or does La Russa just get credit for all the smart things if you can find them? The White Sox are 46.5 games out of first. They were eliminated mathematically 2 weeks ago. We're still in August. They were eliminated in the middle of August, the earliest that any team has ever been mathematically eliminated in the expansion era. The wild card era, the expanded wild card era. What a triumph for the disgraceful chairman of the White Sox.
You suck.
They are 74 games under 500, a franchise record for a team that's been around for 124 years. They've been shut out 14 times. They have suffered 9 walk-off losses. They have blown 51 leads. Joey Ice at my Trader Joe's pointed out the worst run differential was by the 1899 Cleveland Spiders, then of the National League, at minus 723, right? So maybe Chris Getz's great-great-grandfather developed that roster. In modern baseball era, and this is really something that has not been on anyone's radar among all the suckage of this team, in modern baseball, which means since 1900, the 1932 Boston Red Sox have the worst recorded run differential, minus 349. The Sox are at minus 287. You do the math because I can't. But surely in the next month, they can lose by a combined more than 63 runs. And that would set yet another record.
You guys suck.
The White Sox have won 7 games in July and August. They won 9 in June. They've won 7 in the 2 months since. They've lost 34 of their last 38 since the All-Star break. They are trending the right way to break the 62 Mets record. So can they, and are people rooting for it? Sox fans should be. That's why I look at it. They you know, rain down all the bleep possible on this ownership, the one that insults its fan base. So an idea I had earlier in the week, I told Sean Sears, I want to talk to Jay Hook. He was a member of the 1962 Mets for the full season. So was Craig Anderson. The Athletic got to these guys. And they, these former 62 Mets guys, my question was, do you want the Sox to be worse than you? Do you, are you like the opposite? Are you the 72 Dolphins that pop champagne every time the last unbeaten team finally loses a game? Would you, if the White Sox won their 41st game, would you pop champagne? And then I went down this rabbit hole with Jay Hook. We're just doing the research. I had no idea. He's from Waukegan. Jay Hook went to the Reds, pitched there, won 8 games. He's the first New York Mets winning pitcher. He won a game in 1962, the first time the Mets won a game. He would leave baseball and go be a professor at Northwestern. Wow. And I wanted to talk to Jay Hook, and I came to know him through Stratomatic, as often everything seems to trail back to Stratomatic, a member of the 62 Mets. And nobody on that team, Craig Anderson or Jay Hook that they talked to, wants the Sox to go through it. They don't want them to go through it. But part of it is like, you know, we're the lovable Mets, the amazing Mets, as Casey Stengel called them. And also quoted in this article in The Athletic, Dave Bagdade wrote, "A Year in Mudville, the full story of Casey Stengel and the original Mets." He happens to be a White Sox fan. Quote, "I don't want to see their record eclipsed." He'd said this in an email to The Athletic. Quote, "I love the idea that they were the worst team in baseball of the modern era, but that they lost with personality and humor and that they remain one of the most loved teams of any era, despite or possibly because of their record. The 24 Sox are just a steaming pile of baseball ineptitude. They don't lose with personality and humor. They just lose. I don't want anything about the Sox team to be enshrined in baseball immortality. Close quote, Dave Bagdade, author. So let's do that Bears thing, all right? Like when the schedule comes out, you go, Tennessee, oh, that's a win, my friend. Right? Everybody predicts the record. Let's do the Bears thing for the Sox in the remaining series. Let's predict down the stretch with an eye on the Sox becoming the biggest joke in baseball history, if they weren't already, which would burnish the chairman's legacy. So here are the Mets. The Mets are three games behind Atlanta in the wild card. They're good. They need to ruin the Sox. They did last night. Three losses, my friends. Okay? Again, we've got to keep the Sox to eight wins or fewer. Next up, the Orioles. The Orioles are four game up in the wild card, number one wild card in the American League. They're good. They have Eloy's hamstring. Maybe they have a grip on Eloy's hamstring. I don't know. They swept the Sox, you might recall, in that four-gamer in May, which ended with ill-equipped, embarrassing manager Pedro Grifol calling his guys bleeping flat.
Hi, Mom!
Which was the bleeping end for the manager, who guaranteed one thing, and that was his team would come out ready to kick your ass every game, and they never did, and they couldn't, and he failed there in so many places representing the White Sox at Hood Ornament for the last two seasons. Orioles sweep again, my friends. Loss, loss, loss. Then come the Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox are 3.5 games behind the Twins for the last wild card. And they're playing like they need it because they do. But here's the thing with the Red Sox. They don't always play to form. They just don't. The White Sox, I fear, will take one, my friend.
Just one. Just one.
Next, the Guardians are leading the Central. Cleveland represents trouble for those of us wanting the White Sox to achieve this kind of disgraceful, this kind of immortality. The Sox are 5-5 against the Guardians. The 5-5, they suck in the division, but one of the teams I got to play down the stretch, the one that's leading the division, the Sox are playing 500 against the Guardians. I see the Sox taking 2 of 3 because, look, it's nonsense, of course, and baseball is nonsense. So now we're at 3 wins. The Sox can only win 5 more if they're going to wear Chairman Reinsdorf's deserved collar as the all-time worst. Or maybe the sash. He'll have the sash. Sash, all-time worst.
I like the sash. I think that's a nice touch.
And then, Oakland. Now, the A's were supposed to be the White Sox. They were supposed to suck out loud for all time. Right? Team didn't even know they were going to play. They're playing. They're leaving Oakland, that's for sure. And the team was headed out of town with an owner the fans were demanding sell. And, obviously the Sox stole that idea from the A's. Those A's are a stunning 28.5 games ahead of Chairman Reinsdorf's American Legion team. I see the Sox winning one game. Now we're in trouble because here come the Angels. The Angels are worse than the A's, but nobody's worse than the White Sox. They're still 24.5 games ahead of the White Sox. This feels like trouble. We can't afford to have the Sox take 2 out of 3 from the Angels. The Sox play the Angels twice down the stretch, home and away. And maybe the only good news in these series is that the Angels are better on the road than at home. But one of these series is at home for the Angels. So when the Sox are going to take one in Disneyland, which when the Sox play there and they play the Angels is known as the crappiest place on earth. And we're at 5 wins, my friends. We can only have them win eight. Luckily, we have the Padres.
Yeah, it feels like a sweep, right?
The Padres are tied for the first wild card spot in the National League. And I can't imagine Manny Machado. Remember, he's the hood ornament for the Sox franchise that acts like he's the smartest guy in the room. They were going to tell the guy who had all the leverage, hey, you got to earn the last 2 years of a 10-year contract. The Padres said you don't. Oh, okay.
Also, your cousin's here. He's going to play for us.
So I don't think Manny's going to let bad things happen. I think you're right, Sean. I see a Padres sweep. And here's the Angels again. This time it's in Chicago. Again, the Angels play better on the road. They suck, but so do the White Sox. The Angels play better on the road. So I say the Sox take one, and that would be Fan Depreciation Day. That would be part of it.
The irony there. Geez.
Yeah. Yeah. As if the chairman couldn't depreciate his fan base anymore. So, the Sox are perilously close to passing the Mets. We cannot have that. There is an all-time record, which is held by a National League team. And then there is the American League record, one loss short, the Detroit Tigers. The White Sox closed the season against the Detroit Tigers. This is one of the greatest loser storylines ever. In 2003, the Tigers lost 119 games. They were on a pace, like the White Sox, to break the Mets record, but they won 5 of 6 down the stretch. They avoided 120. They avoided the horrible, terrible, embarrassing, no good year that the White Sox are having and need to have and need to complete. So, I have the Sox getting swept to close out the season and owning a most deserving, the hard-earned dereliction of a season, of a team, of a franchise, of a fan base that will produce record number of T-shirts screaming, sell the team, Bozo. You know, there was a picture we saw on the Twitterverse of Midwest related and the White Sox with Roger Bosser, the sod father, designing that baseball field that they want to put in the 78. And there's photos, area photo. Here's where the ball field is. Here's what it looks like. Here's, and they were doing it because they're trying to curry favor. And I found it perfect. It's a perfect picture because it's a photo op for you to see all the people who want to give the disgraced chairman billions for this idea. For a team and a fan base that he just insults. We're not going to be in the Ohtani race, I'll tell you that. Okay. Well, you're in the 62 Mets race. I'm Steve Rosenblum with Saturday Suckage. It has never been more appropriate to call it that. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Look, we're not going to be in the Ohtani race, I'll tell you that right now. I'll give you...
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Hey, White Sox fans. I can't speak on this Labor Day. I wonder if I can at all. Nick Castellanos. He is one of you. Here's a piece of his interview with John Boy Media.
If you were commissioner for a day, what would you change about the game?
I would change that ownership doesn't have any severe consequences for losing for an extended period of time. You know, so like if we're in the big leagues and we don't perform well, we get demoted or cut. If their organization didn't perform well, somebody else would have an opportunity to buy it from them. You know, just to, you know, like keep it to where nobody can really own the game of baseball, because the game is above true ownership. But that would never happen.
No, it would never happen because it makes too much sense. You can't relegate them. The owners own the game, and you'll do it their way, and that's how they'll continue being a disgrace, and they could just insult their fan base. We're not going to be in the Ohtani race. I'll tell you that. You're in the 62 Mets race, and then some team later, after you break the Mets record for the worst baseball season ever, some team will be in the 2024 White Sox race. You'll be remembered forever. It's a disgrace and an embarrassment. Congratulations. We will see what Paul Sullivan thinks about that. And the Cubs pitching staff up in the air. They got to win. And they have been winning. And it hasn't necessarily moved them closer. The end of the season gets closer. The wild card does not. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.